Good morning and welcome to Countrywide. On this week's programme, we journey through a hay meadow in County Roscommon. We hear about a business making beachwear from recycled fabrics, and we meet the couple who have brought a new life to an old building to make their first home. And you can contact us by text on 51551 or email countrywide@rte.ie. And what a range of photographs on all the front pages this morning showing our Irish Olympians. They are full of action from Paris 2024. The Irish Independent has a picture of Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy, all smiles, of course, holding a tricolour after their gold medal win. And the Irish Times just captures that moment exactly on the water when they realised they had won. Then the Irish Examiner, the paper closest to their hometown of Skibbereen, shows the two men smiling, holding two tricolours aloft. And certainly Team Ireland in general have brought joy in abundance from Paris this week. And as we heard in the bulletin, of course, there is a lot still to look forward to today. Now, there is no what it says in the papers this morning, but do not despair, because we will bring you a review of the papers with an agricultural twist later in the programme with Rachel Martin, editor of the Farming Examiner, and Pat O'Toole of the Irish Farmers Journal. But first, how are you planning on spending the bank holiday weekend? For many, it's a chance to get stuck into a DIY project about the house. But spare a thought for Johnny Gleeson and Gillian Richardson from County Carlow. They are not just putting up a few shelves. Oh no, they are in the middle of transforming an 1880s a granite grain store into their very first home. Now, many young people out there are looking for homes. The cost of housing is rising and 41% of under 35s are still living at home. So it's not surprising that major renovation projects like this are becoming more and more popular. And of course, to go with that popularity, there are vacant and derelict housing grants available that could potentially help out. But if you are thinking about renovating a house and applying for these grants, there are terms and conditions. And not every vacant or derelict building will qualify, as Johnny and Gillian have discovered. Now, I travelled to meet them at the renovation project near Tullow in County Carlow to learn more about their situation. They've kept the costs right down by doing a lot of the work themselves, so that as I turned off the lane, I could hear the digger at work with Johnny at the helm and see the elegant Victorian granite grain store in all its glory. Dating back to the 1880s, the building has most recently been used to store the farm's quad bikes, but the couple are determined to bring it back to life. A worthwhile but costly endeavour.
We've been used for storing grain.
Oh! Is there writing up there on those beams?
Yeah. I can see those names like Marty Dwyer, August 23rd, 1912, so Harry Wrangell, 28th, 1944. Michael Story, Haid Lodge.
So this building is local history.
Yeah, it would have been.
There's other names still around, like Quirk, Smith. They're local names, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And you've got new windows, which are lovely and fit really well, but you've got a couple of really big glass windows, so Dermot Bannon would approve.
Yeah. They're just such lovely views out, even across the fields, looking out at the sheep, and even the hills in the distance, the Shalala Hills.
Given the derelict state of the building when the pair took it on, they applied for the vacant property grant, worth €50,000. But it's not good news.
We haven't been rejected, it's just sitting there, but we're not eligible, as agricultural buildings don't seem to qualify under the grant. If it was a school, if it was a church, if it was an old shop, it would qualify, but the inspector came out from the county council, came out and had a good look around, and he said even if we had some sort of chimney or fireplace, proved that it was lived in some way, but we can't.
We couldn't prove it was definitely lived in, so...
I mean, what were they looking for? Exactly. What would have been like definitive proof?
I think a chimney, like if it definitely had a chimney, you were elected, like, in that time.
It's public money. They have to justify it, and we understand that. We're hope. You never know. I'd like to see it if it changed, that agriculture buildings were included. Not for us. I think we're probably gone past it.
Yeah.
But for someone else who would like to do it, give them that chance.
So it's hard to find housing in rural Ireland, close to your families, close to where you want to live.
Yeah, because I actually have a friend who is looking to buy in Carlow. I think there's maybe 15 to 20 properties for sale. And to rent, there's very little as well. So it's hard. People want to live in Carlow.
It's a beautiful county, why wouldn't you?
I love it, I'm biased.
We had that going
for
time.
Yeah, distracted.
We did. We were lucky to get the Build Heritage Grant for the roof, which was applied for the County Council as well. Just when we started the building, and we took stripped the old roof, we put back on the blue bangers, and that was
so the proper original style slates.
Yeah, they all went back on.
We actually already had blue bangers on it, so we managed to salvage 60% of them.
Yeah, I managed to salvage 60% of them, which was good, and then we replaced the rest. And like the cast iron gutters that are up there now, they're all covered in the grant and the downpipes.
I guess in terms of costs, I know it's a delicate of a question, but do you have a rough idea in mind of how much it's going to cost you to make this a livable home for you both?
Me being able to get my hands in and stuck in, it'll definitely help to bring the cost down. But we're probably we're on the same budget as building a house out of the ground, and that is true that Jillian was gifted it, so that helps. That was a big help at the start. Like.
Are we around the 250 mark?
Oh yeah, but that's the hope. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the hope now.
We'll end on 250,000 hopefully.
We're under budget, but that's because you and your dad have done a hell of a lot. Yeah.
It would have been nice though, I imagine, to get the grant, because then you would have nearly been under the 200,000, mm-hmm. which probably would have helped a lot with your mortgage and doing other bits and pieces.
Oh yeah, like if we got the grant, it would have been great. Like, I feel sorry for couples that maybe took on an old building or took on an old house and they were reliant on the grant nearly. They went into the process with, oh, we get the grant for so much. We kind of started this without ever thinking about the grant, and the grants came on board. But it would have been great. It would have definitely been great. But it's kind of a shame, because anyone we talked to said, like, these old buildings are the ones that should be saved. And I know a few buildings around that would have got the grants, and you're like, it's just been an old rack or a ruin, like, and they're getting it. It's a modern ruin, like, it's been left for 20 years, and that's after getting the grant. But you could put it away, like, oh, they'd rather see this cut granite buildings fall to the ground than give a grant on them. So, look, we heard word that there might be a possible review on them. Oh, we want to get the plaster work done. So we actually got the lime plaster and the cork insulation on. That's a big job. About 2 inches of that all on the inside of the building. So that was what we're going to put in for the grant. Like, and that wasn't a cheap process. And that would have been a huge help. But it didn't come about. Like,
so what have you learned? What advice would you give to any other young couple out there who might have an old building like this on their family farm?
I love the building so much, even more than I did. I'm so glad we've done it. So don't be afraid to take that leap, because it did scare us to do it.
Yeah, like it did.
It's an unknown.
Like, it did, like, and but there's such a wealth of knowledge out there now. Like, should we've started this process and even get messages on Instagram and all, or who'd you get for that job? How did you do this? What products you use? Like, there's a wealth of knowledge out there, and there's probably people thinking about the old buildings. I know even my own friend group, there's two or three of the people in that friend group that have old buildings on the farms, and they're like, oh, I must call them and see yours, and then they come down like, oh, I'm definitely going to do that at home and stuff. Like, so it's just one of them things. Like, if you have the opportunity and you want to be in the area, you want to be in rural Ireland, it's a great opportunity.
And that was Johnny Gleeson and Gillian Richardson there, renovating an old building to make their new home. And I'm delighted to say that I'm joined now by Deirdre Swords, who's the vacant property officer with Mayo County Council, and by Dominic Keogh, a stonemason. Good morning to you both. Deirdre, I'm going to come straight to you. So that was Johnny and Gillian, who applied for a grant under the Vacant and Derelict Property Grant Scheme. It's a very popular grant scheme, especially in Mayo, which is, of course, the second largest county in Ireland. But can you explain exactly how much money each of them is worth and how people can be eligible to apply for them as well?
Okay. I can appreciate where the couple are coming from, and the story really resonates, you know, when I hear what they're going through and how hard they're working. So fair play to them. I suppose in terms of the grant was set up just over 2 years ago, and there's two elements to the grant. You can apply for the grant if you have a vacant property, and that's to the value of €50,000. If your property is derelict, and for the purposes of the grant, that means that it's structurally unsound or unsafe, you can get a top up on top of the vacant grant, and your grant can come to 70,000. For any county that's rural, like Mayo, we have islands, there is an additional 20% added to your grant, because obviously the cost of materials and trades are increased because of the islands. While the eligibility is quite broad, agricultural buildings aren't currently eligible. And as the couple said, the grant currently is under review. We're not sure what it's going to look like. Hopefully it'll be targeted when it comes back. We're hoping kind of late this year we'll hear what, you know, if there is any changes. But in terms of people thinking, right, I have a property, I'm in rural Ireland, or you're in a town and village in rural Ireland. If the property is 24 months vacant, if it was built before 2007, that's the core eligibility. Kind of the rest of it, we would say to applicants, is kind of paperwork. If you're willing to live in it as your primary principal residence, the grant is for you. If you're willing to rent it, the grant is for you. There is a 10-year kind of clawback that you must live in it for 10 years, you must rent it for 10 years. But yeah, like you say, because of the huge numbers in applying, eligibility isn't an issue, and it's really seen as a real positive. And we're delighted when the grant set out originally, it was actually only for towns or villages. And the minister quickly did a kind of U-turn a couple of months in and said, listen, this is for all locations.
Because
and
you're right, you know, that demand from rural Ireland is there for houses. You know, it's not just an urban issue. And I would like to talk about your own county, because you're really spearheading it there. What has been the level of demand? How many applications have you had so far?
So we have 577 applications, and that would be within the 2-year timeframe. And I suppose we're working hard as well. One of the things that we're doing here in Mayo is that we go to the public, if you like, that we don't sit and wait for them to come, even though with the numbers you'd kind of think we don't need to be. But just like that couple were saying there, I think it's really important that people are aware of the grant as early in their thinking, you know, of buying or getting a property transferred. There'd be an argument to say that everywhere on the Western Seaboard is rural. But the breakdown of our approved grants would be kind of 57% are absolutely rural and 43% would be within our towns and villages.
And there's so quite a bit of money that you've paid out so far. And there's only four that have been refused so far out of all those applications, and quite a bit of money that you've paid out.
Yeah, yeah. So we're lucky, I suppose, because we're so visible and because we're, you know, people can come to us. The message is kind of very much trickling down through the communities and community groups and, you know, the networks within our rural communities around. This is a real option. We'd have a lot of applicants who are coming to us. There's an old house on the farm. You know, they would have traditionally kind of built the new house, and, you know, it might be their uncles or their parents, and they're wondering, is this an option now? We're saying, absolutely, it can be your primary principal residence. You can transfer ownership to someone within your household and they move in. You know, it's really breathing life back into rural communities. And for, you know, the farming community in Mayo, I guess, like, it can be seen as an income stream as well, because, you know, with tight margins and small holdings, it's really working in terms of bringing a house back, but also provided rental property within a community.
Yeah, and I think it's probably important to say that, you know, people are always worried that potentially vulture funds or corporate funds could get involved in this. And there are things, like you mentioned, the clawback there. And I think it's only 2 grants per individual who can apply. I might just bring Dominic in there, because, you know, we talk about doing up old houses on farms or in rural areas, and it can be a bit off-putting. But Dominic, you're a stonemason, so I imagine you have experience in this territory. But when people come to you first and they're talking about doing up an old property, what is their biggest concern? Is it, say, that a building has no foundation, or they have no idea about what kind of lime to use? What are the questions that you're getting?
All of the above, Anna. and a lot more with it. I suppose, I kind of get people coming to me that have had maybe a little bit of advice from different people, or they've gone down the route where maybe they've had an engineer out to have a look at the place, or an architect. And in some cases, the people that they've had look at the place mightn't have as much experience with dealing with vernacular buildings or traditional buildings as somebody who's kind of boots on the ground. And so they kind of put the frighteners on a lot of homeowners sometimes, because, you know, obviously these houses in a lot of cases or agricultural buildings, they would have no foundations under them because that's just the way that they were built. And 99.9% of the traditional buildings in Ireland wouldn't have a foundation under them. And so it kind of jars with our modern building methods. So I'm kind of, I suppose, I kind of go in and try and calm the homeowners down and tell them that their beloved properties aren't going to fall into the ground, in the majority of cases anyway, and just give them a little bit of advice based on my experience about how to kind of progress and do what's right for the building, what's right for their budget, and bring the best of modern building practices in with traditional materials and methods. So I kind of have to walk the tightrope between what's best for the building and what's best for the client, I suppose. So it can be a bit of a shaky rope to navigate sometimes.
I can imagine as someone who grew up in an old house as well. I think a lot of us have memories of every time that it rained, the windows would weep, basically. But I guess, you know, in terms of cheap houses, and every time people would be looking on Daft or other websites and looking at homes in rural Ireland or other areas, and they see an old house and they think, oh, that might be a bit of a bargain. But I nearly always see now, scrolling down, that the auctioneer has, you know, oh, well, potentially the grant, you might be eligible to get the grant. I mean, what's your thoughts around that, about people getting a grant now to do up a home? What's the impact do you think it might be having?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I suppose, you know, I'm from Mayo originally, so I understand what Deirdre is saying there about the rural impact in Mayo. It's great, but it can be a bit scary as well because it's overwhelming. And I'm currently living in Leitrim, so I mean these areas were historically places where cheap houses could always be found. You know, like within the 15,000 to 20,000, 30,000 bracket, you'd find some tumble down cottage that could be done up and made into a beautiful home. And I suppose with the danger of adding this tagline of eligible for the grant, it kind of puts this vision in people's minds when they're scrolling through and dreaming of their forever home, that they have this 50,000 to 70,000 in the bank already. And it can be a dangerous thing to have in the back of your head. I mean, as Johnny and Gillian, their story, as they outlined very, very well there, you know, you really have to be careful that you don't factor that in too much into your budget until you actually have it in the bank, because you do have to put that money out.
Yeah.
You have to put that money out first, and then you can claw it back. So it can be the cause of a lot of that housing stock being kind of jumped on, and the prices inflating. Which, you know, I suppose I'm always a little bit terrified of that because I can't protect all of the old buildings that I want to, and some of them get a modern 2024 bungalow shoehorned into a traditional structure.
Hey, some people like a bungalow. There's some bungalow bliss out there, don't worry.
Bungalow bliss. No, that's a whole different department altogether. I can't get involved in that.
No, but Dominic, thank you very much for that. And I guess there's a lot of interest out there. And next weekend, you will be running a course in Manor Hamilton on traditional building skills. So there is an appetite out there, and people can book as well. I think it's the Irish Architectural Inventory. That course is booked out, but you'll probably have other ones as well. Deirdre, just coming back to you briefly, I know you're a huge advocate for this, and I guess, you know, Dominic raised some concerns there, and I guess a lot of people would have those, but you would encourage people to look for it. And I guess, what's the turnaround in terms of just payment, just to finish on, when people have built their house, how quickly would you aim to be paying them the money if they tick all the boxes?
Yeah, so once they finish their renovation works, like if they're going for a primary principal residence, they'll be in, and there'll be very little paperwork after that. It's an inspection. It can literally take 2 to 3 weeks from when final claim kind of comes in to when an inspection takes place. And that clawback that we talked about, that protects the kind of the public coffers, that you will do what you said, that takes a little bit of time. So in around a month from when you've completed your works, And bear in mind for applicants as well that you can apply for the SEAI grants as well as the vacant property grants.
Lovely.
So they can also kind of support you in terms of your budget and making it, you know, more sustainable.
Plan ahead would probably be a key there. So plenty of food for thought. So Deirdre Swords, thank you so much. Vacant Homes Officer with Mayo County Council, and Dominic Gio, stonemason at momentummorestone.ie. And we did get a statement from the Department of Housing as well, saying that in terms of agricultural buildings, they're keeping it under review. But before there were any grants, Dubliner Keith Brennan and his partner Caroline moved to rural Roscommon to renovate an old house. Now, it took them a year to sort out the house and many more years to learn how to farm the fields around it. But 2 years ago, he had some success with a new traditional hay meadow. But this year's poor weather has caused Keith to wonder if there will be any value in the hay in his meadows this year.
It's July 2022. I'm standing by the gate on the hill meadow. The wind in the trees is a sound of the sea. It ripples the grass with a startling and snap. I haven't been here for months. I had a broken arm that kept the meadow ungrazed from spring. I opened the gate. The flock flow past and are swallowed in the hip-high green. Plumes of insects drift skyward as the flock spreads through the half-wilderness. Above, a chittering swirl of swallows, 20, 30 more, roll and pitch the length of the field. I push a path through the grass. Butterflies and moths rise and awake from the clumsy keel of me. Dragonflies hawk the grassy sea. Wild mint mixes with the almond scent of meadowsweet. I pull the grass apart, and there, embroidered in the field's green, wild orchids, meadow vetch, chickweed, self-heal, wild blueberry, and more. The sun sinks beneath the shoulder of the hill. Bats now swerve and dip amongst the arc of the swallows, close enough to feel the wind of their wings. I've accidentally made a wildflower hay meadow. It's like nothing else I have in my farm. My neighbour's half-wild fields pour their wildflower seed into the ungrazed neglect of mine. It takes my breath away, so I make two more in the next 2 years. These meadows, I hoped, would give me hay to feed my flock through winter. The flowering hayfields and hedgerows feed the honeybees I learned to keep. Two ways to monetize the farm's growing wildness. Money and biodiversity in the bank. Last year, for the first time, the hare made a home here. Her leverets in the rushy lee of our furthest wildflower hayfield. Meadow brown butterflies throng where the hayfield curls against the alder woods. Foxes and the liquid ripple of a pine marten hunt the driveway between. This year, I don't take hay. The summer has wrung itself out into the soaked fields for weeks, and the clay of the hayfield sucks at my feet. I let the sheep in the last days of July. Their grazing at least will offset some of the hay's loss and winter's cost. The bees too have harvested a crop from the field, but I know the honey money will not quite pay for winter feed. I close the gate on the grazing flock. Dragonflies hunt the bee-loud hedge. Swirling mobs of swallows scour the sky. The bawling call and return of ewe and lamb. My neighbour comes by, in a break between rains, to harvest vegetables from beside the meadow. "I don't know about these things," she says, "but there's a huge sound of bees from your hedgerow. Is it the sign of a swarm or something? Is it okay?" "No," I say. "It's supposed to sound that way." I think of Beckett. Try. Fail. Try again. Fail better. It's next year's work, that last one.
Welcome back to Countryride with those words from Beckett there. I'm Hannah Quinn-Mulligan and I am with you until 9 o'clock this morning. Now, last week on Countryride, we had Joe McNamara. Now, the Claddagh races that were talked about, the Omi races, are cancelled or postponed until the 24th of August. But we wish them all the best of luck. And now it's time for an ad break.
Email countrywide@rte.ie.
Create your avatar. Hone your first move. Enjoy your newfound power. Climb the leaderboard. Dominate the leaderboard. Listen to people scream your gamer tag. Kirsty_26. Kirsty_26. Kirsty_26!
For less, Selected IKEA gaming setups are now at a new lower price, along with thousands of other products. IKEA, the wonderful everyday. Game over.
Hey, Ian. I didn't know we got the same bus into the office.
Oh, yeah. Thought I'd change things up a bit, Trace.
Is that a...
A bull. Good spot.
If bringing a motivational bull to the office, maybe not by bus, increased sales value by 4%, you'd do it. Why not advertise? Advertising brings real business results. Talk to an IAPI member agency today.
I think I might walk in, actually. Get the steps in, you know.
Based on 2023's most effective campaigns.
Make your savings work for you. With Raisin, you can earn up to 3.65% interest for your savings. A single login lets you seamlessly transfer your savings to banks across Europe with no fees. Learn how over a million European customers already earn high interest rates. Open your account today. Raisin.ie. Easy, flexible, secure. Raisin Bank AB trading as Raisin.ie is authorised by the Federal Financial Supervisory Authority in Germany and is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland for conduct of business rules.
Flowgas, as the official energy partner of Team Ireland, believe it takes the right type of energy to inspire Olympians like Ciara McGeehan.
When I'm running, I think of the people back home in Portaferry who believed in me years before there were ever any medals in the picture, on the good days and the bad days. That's what gives me the energy to push on.
That's why Flowgas are proud to be the energy behind Team Ireland on the road to Paris 2024. Flowgas, energy for everyone.
RTE Radio 1.
Milton Jones. His brand new show, Ha Milton.
I'm a bit of a lazy writer, according to my children, QWERTY and F12.
Live across Ireland this September 18th, 3 Olympia Theatre, Dublin. 20th, Opera House, Cork. And September 21st, Leisureland, Galway.
Last year I went on a ballooning holiday, put on 4 stone.
Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. Milton Jones, a whole new show of daftness. You know it makes sense.
Comedy updates on RTE Radio 1.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back to Countrywide, and again you can contact us on 51551. But now, from horse racing on the beach to beachwear. You know, if a doctor tells you that you need to change your lifestyle if you want to get better, well, it can be irritating or even impossible, or in Fran Fogarty's case, inspiring. She'd always had a passion for a particular business since she was a girl, and now this doctor's advice was her cue to change her lifestyle and pursue that dream. The only problem was she found out that the business she had a passion for also had its troubles. But Fran and her husband Fergal had an idea, not a complete cure, but they set about their own little business in Kerry. Let Fran take up the story, beginning with the day her doctor had stern words with her about changing her lifestyle.
So I went home that day to Ferg and I said, I'm going back to college. I need to go back and study fashion design. And my poor husband, he gave me a Monster pencil case and a bottle of Buckfast. Because I was about to be a student again. And I just arrived in and I just was like ecstatic to be eventually, almost 30 years later, following my ultimate dream, which was to do fashion design. I was always sewing as a kid. I originally started in school. I used to sew collars rather than make the whole blouse, and I used to Velcro them onto my jumpers, school uniform. But I was no sooner in the college, and next thing I realised how toxic the industry was. The textile industry and fashion industry is the second biggest polluter to our planet, outside of the oil industry. You know, Kenya have a huge problem at the moment with the landfills, and it's mountains of clothes being sent out. If you look down from space, you will think they're actually mountains, and they're not. And it takes forever because most of our clothes, unfortunately, are made with polyester, which is oil from the ground, and it just doesn't break down. And if people only understood how long it took to grow cotton, how much pesticides and water it takes. And I said, the game is over. I said, I'm done. Everything's been made. The industry's toxic. I can't add to it. I'm too late to the game. And I was gutted. I was beyond gutted. And eventually we started doing workshops on sustainability and looking at how we could fix the problem. And next thing, I started thinking about just the materials, the textiles, trying to come up with a product.
started sea swimming like everybody else during COVID. And I was sitting there one day and I was looking at all these swim robes, dry robes, going, oh my God, like surely I can sew two towels together. And then Ferg, my husband, came up with the idea, well, why don't we try and save towels from landfill?
We get all of our towels from Celtic Linen down in Wexford. They're towels that have come out of five-star properties, five-star hotels. Typically, a five-star property is going to require very fluffy, very fresh toweling. So they'll be turned around within a year. They shred them into rags and sold them usually into the motor trade for cleaning up oil and cleaning hands and all the rest of it. And then they go into landfill. So it's even worse. It's one thing to put cotton into landfill because it'll actually decompose very quickly, but not if it's covered in oil. Like, people think that recycling is the be-all and end-all when it comes to getting rid of used fabrics. You take the pair of jeans that you're wearing, you're probably going to be shocked to hear you can't recycle them. They're considered to be contaminated because, yes, they're cotton, as in denim, but they have metal, probably a metal zip, metal studs on the side, but critically, they're also sewn together with polyester thread. Polyester doesn't decompose when you put it into landfill. And the recycling industry is not interested in taking products apart. Towels we use as our raw material, turning them into a beach dress or a swim poncho or a hoodie or whatever.
So we started doing the swim ponchos. We started doing tops like this, the one I'm wearing. Yeah, it's a sleeveless t-shirt top. It's floral, hand-painted, taking in all the flowers of the area.
We're standing right outside the store here on Dingle Marina, looking down on all the boats, all the yachts and fishing boats in the heart of Dingle Town.
Yeah, on holiday here.
Oh, fabulous.
Only for one day. How do you name that?
A swim poncho. Or a swim robe. So they are all handmade here in the shop?
Yeah.
Why did we pick this as a shop? We looked at several properties, and the minute Fran walked in here, she said, this is it. This is where I want to be. Predominantly because three quarters, even more, of the wall space here is glass. So we're looking straight out onto Dingle Harbour, the marina, through the mouth of the harbour into Dingle Bay. And everything you see here would have started life as a white hotel towel that we have recovered. And we dye them the royal we, my better half. I do the talking, she does the working.
But I love that, that's gorgeous.
All right, okay. Well, if you like, if you really do like it or whatever, I can send it to you.
I'll take your info.
Yeah, perfect.
And then I'll email you.
Yeah, okay.
That's it.
So the shelves are full of colourful towels, towels that have been hand-dyed, hand-painted, ice-dyed. There's a huge splash of colour. That's a hand-painted towel. You might say, well, I'd like that for the front of my swim poncho, and I'd like that particular blue one for the back of it, and I'd like a green pocket on the front. You pick your towels, and Fran in the back here can actually sew everything together.
I would honestly say, and I said it here when I said a few words when we opened, if I die tomorrow, and I didn't mean dyeing towels, if I die tomorrow, be rest assured, everybody here, that I will have died happy, because I'm absolutely living my dream 100%.
That was Fran and Fergal in their shop, Lily Mays, ending that report by Ronan Kelly from Dangany Gush I Gunte Kiri. So there is no what it says in the papers this morning on RT Radio 1, but we are going to bring you a short review of the papers this week anyway. And I'm joined in studio to do this with Rachel Martin, the farming editor of the Irish Examiner, and Pat O'Toole from the Irish Farmers Journal. You're both very welcome to studio. Thanks for coming in. And you've been looking at the Farming Independent. I have made you look at all the other newspapers and obviously your own. But to come to you first, Rachel, you had your opinion piece, your editorial this week about the straw incorporation.
Well, now, this has been covered everywhere, so it's not just the farm exam, although I'm slightly biased on that one. But yes, there's been a lot of debate and anger over the last couple of weeks about the straw incorporation measure. So for those who maybe don't know what that is basically where farmers, tillage farmers, are paid to plough the stalk of the grain into the ground. And the idea is that it improves the nutrient composition of the soil. It improves the soil health. But the flip side of that So it's good for the environment in one respect, but in another respect, then the flip side of that is it means then there's less straw for livestock farmers to use. So it's very much a story that you can take from any angle, because everybody's very annoyed about this, and everybody's got a different reason to be annoyed as well. And poor Charlie finds himself stuck right in the middle of it, the agriculture minister, because of course, didn't he decide to pull the measure this year because there's suspected to be a shortage of straw? Then that got hit with really, really bad response from the tillage farmers, who quite rightly were very annoyed that something they'd signed up to in good faith had suddenly been pulled. And of course, then the livestock farmers are going, but hang on, we still need straw. So the latest outcome of this has basically been that the straw implementation measure will now go ahead. And additionally, there's going to be a payment for tillage farmers of €175 per hectare for baling straw. So it kind of gives everybody the best of both worlds now. But my opinion piece this week was actually saying, well, look, I actually think we're missing a bit of a trick here with this, because we can still get the best of both worlds here. And I put the headline on it where there's muck, there's opportunity, and here's why. And if you haven't read it already, it's on the Irish Examiner website.
And there are other available websites. But I guess look, the minister isn't here to defend himself. I guess he was thinking of the terrible weather this year, and that livestock farmers in particular are looking for straw. But I mean, like, full disclosure, Pat, you are a tillage farmer. I imagine there might be some straw either being baled or being ploughed into your fields. What's your take on the whole situation? Because it's only been 2.5 weeks, but the fallout from it is unbelievable, because it's essentially the minister, first of all, said he's pulling the straw incorporation measure. Then he's done this U-turn now where tillage farmers are up in arms and suddenly getting paid now to bale straw. It's been a strange couple of weeks.
It has. I think what he's done in the end is might have made more sense at the start, where he's incentivising farmers to pull out of the straw incorporation measure and alleviate the potential shortage of bedding, because straw is not fodder. It was talked about as a fodder crisis, but straw is not fodder, it's bedding. Being a Wexford tillage farmer, I think the big issue is that before the straw incorporation scheme, we were left with straw, unwanted straw, more often than not. It's a surplus product in our area. But a lot of people had already started incorporating straw before the scheme came in.
And it's a surplus product for you in the east. I mean, for farmers in the west, it is
absolutely
not.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, but when there's a deficit, the deficit's in the northwest. When there's a surplus, it's in the southeast, and our straw is practically worthless when it's baled. But I think the other side of this was the sense that the minister pulling the scheme when he did undermined the integrity of all schemes, because farmers signed up in May. Some farmers had already started chopping, and that the sense was too late. So what he's done, I suppose, he's pleased nobody. And you have, you know, people you had Richie Hackett in the Farming Independent, who is an advisor, saying that the flaw is that it's damaging the relationship between sectors and it's interfering in the market. Siobhan Walsh in the Farming Independent, quoting a former TD, Tom Barry, who was saying that he cannot believe what the Minister of the Department promised anymore after this.
Why did he do it? Why do you think the Minister did it?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. It was out of character for the Minister, because very typically he will build build support for a measure before he brings it in, and he'll also create the expectation it's coming. This is a bolt from the blue.
Rachel, do you want to come in there?
Well, no, I have been speaking to a lot of farmers who say that down in Cork, who say that they have been having to import straw from as far as England, just to
and
meet
we
supply.
Don't want that because of
exactly comes to the risk of black grass, of course. But there are nutritive benefits to using straw as part of a dairy diet, for example. You know, it helps prevent acidosis, for example, you know. So I don't think that's quite right to say there's no benefit to feeding straw. It can
that's
be used
a dairy
as part
farm
of
putting you in your place there.
It can be used as part of a total mixed ration. But, and in fact, it's during times off of water shortage, straw actually mixing in straw to use as a buffer feed is one of the first things any nutritional cell advise a farmer does to stretch out their straw.
Straw is important, and it's been a strange turn of events, but we are where we are now. I guess moving on then, Pat, you wanted to bring up Antashka, which has been back in the courts, and it was on the front page of the Farming Independent this week as well.
Yeah, and it's across all the papers, I suppose. Antashka are bringing the government to court over the nitrates action plan, the nitrates directive. They believe that it breaches the government's commitments towards the environment. It's not protecting water quality enough. It would have huge implications for agriculture. And the IFA and the ICMSA are both notice parties, although the government are the defendants, I suppose, in this case.
So the two main farming organisations.
Yes. Yeah. So this, it's now being referred to the European Union's Court of Justice by Mr Justice Richard Humphreys in the High Court this week. So it's going to the next stage. And an interesting quote.
That's Pat's alarm. That's telling him he's meant to be here.
An interesting quote from him where he said, "We're at a cumulative total in the case of 209,423 words, longer than Crime and Punishment, but falling short of J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. There, the analogy with great literature ends, except perhaps for the punishment part." And I suppose the big fear among farmers with the punishment will come on them in terms of the loss of the derogation, which is an essential part of the nitrates directive. And we heard so much about the nitrates derogation, which is about stocking rates and how many animals you can carry on land. So that case will run and run.
And it is interesting. It's a great line from Richard Humphreys, but it does go to show that there is so much, I guess, emotions. Emotions are running very high in terms of the nitrates derogation among the rural communities. But Antoshka aren't here, and I'm just going to give what they have said in the Farming Independent. And it's Dr. Elaine McGough, who's the head of advocacy for Antoshka. And she does say, "We cannot leave any stone unturned to protect and maintain its quality in relation to water quality." She's talking there. Rachel, you're obviously reporting from Cork. Cork has the highest number of dairy farmers, obviously the highest number of farmers with a derogation.
Livelihoods at the end of the day. So, of course, they're going to feel very annoyed about this. They're going to feel very vexed about this whenever, these proposals have gone through rounds and rounds of consultation. And then after it's even been approved by the European Commission to then be dragged into court, you can see why there's just this real feeling of frustration. This has been a long ongoing issue.
Okay.
And the farm organisations, Amy Ford quotes in the Farmers Journal, she quotes Dennis Drennan, welcoming the court's fair and balanced consideration of farmer concerns. He's the ICMSA president, and the IFA president, Francie Gorman, just said that the case adds further uncertainty to farmers, particularly those in derogation.
Yes, but there are again two sides to this, and water quality is incredibly important, and Ireland's water quality is not where it should be. I think we can both all agree on that. Very quickly then, you both have an Olympic story, I think. So, Pat, do you want to go first with your Olympic story? It's from a local newspaper, which is always good to have.
Yeah, the Southern Star wonderfully have, and I suppose being the West Cork paper, the home of rowing, a man from who lives in Aquista, a 99-year-old man, Patrick Skeen Catling, who as a young boy in London was sent by his parents to Berlin to attend the 1936 Olympics and saw Hitler meeting Jesse Owens in the stadium. So a phenomenal story there in the week that's in it. From someone who's lived in West Cork for the last 50 years.
Of course it is. And Rachel, what do you have?
Well, I don't normally go to the Guardian sports pages for my farming news, but this one, I just thought the headline was far too good to miss. So it's not an oaf, which for those who maybe don't have it right in front of them, it's a play on the French word for egg, of course. So not an oaf. And the story is that catering staff at the Olympic Village in Paris have apparently been forced to ration eggs. Can you believe it? I love a good egg for breakfast, and apparently it is the breakfast of Olympians as well, because you know what it's like trying to feed, say, 10, 15 silage guys coming around to do the work, let alone 15,000 athletes. You can imagine how much protein you need for
them.
They're
all sticking boiled eggs in their pockets.
They must be, but apparently they don't have nearly enough, and the catering partner have said that they've had very exceptionally high demand for certain products such as grilled meats and eggs, so they're looking for those lean proteins.
They should have foreseen that. But Pat O'Toole from the Farmers Journal and Rachel Martin from Farm Examiner, thank you both very much for coming in. But we're not moving too far away from Wexford, as our next guest will let you know. But we have a guest who's going to take part in Fla Cuil na hÉireann Gabhaíle is a Fiche Cathair, which is obviously kicking off. Now, they have been preparing for months, and there are 1,000 volunteers stepping out to welcome 15,000 musicians with an expected 500,000 visitors. Well, some events are ticketed, and you can find out about those on flacule.ie. The beauty of the FLA is that the music is to be found on every street corner, and you don't need a ticket or even an invitation to listen or to join in a session. And among the crowds will be one young farmer from the host county itself. Owen Doyle farms with his father, Tim, near New Ross. So it is absolutely lovely to have you in studio, and you're going to do some banjo playing for us, I think. But first of all, first and foremost, most important question, who's milking the cows?
My father is stuck with that job now at home today. So
we better shout out to all the parents out there who are potentially milking cows while everyone heads off to the FLA. But I guess, what got you into the banjo playing in the first place?
I suppose I started off playing music. I took inspiration from my older cousin who started playing first. I started with Tin Whistle and then moved on to the flute and the bower on, and I always kind of had a grow for the banjo, so I decided to learn that then.
And there's lots of talk about cows loving to hear a bit of Mozart in the morning when they're being milked. How do they feel about the banjo?
I never tried it for them yet, no, but maybe they like it. If they milk well, I'll play it for them.
And Pat, obviously you're a Wexford man as well. What does the FLA mean to Wexford?
Oh, we're so excited. The county, it's already started. The fringe events have been going on the last few days. We had the FLA in Enniscorthy in 99 and 2000, and my own kids took part in the FLA as part of a marching band up in Cavan some years ago. So it's an incredible event. The whole community are just taken over by it, and we can't wait to welcome the whole of Ireland and people from all over the world.
Yeah, I understand, Owen, you're an only child, so it was a cousin who inspired you to take up some musical instruments.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I suppose he was kind of who I was looking up to at the time, and he was my older than me, so I suppose that's what got me into it, and kind of went from there then and went for lessons. And we, two of us, went to the Joe Mooney School together in Drumshambo, so I really got to learn it there. It's kind of a social thing as well, and I got going then. I attend Willie Clancy Week as well, so that's how I keep playing and keep interested.
What does the FLA mean to you? What's the atmosphere like when people go there? Sell it to people now. Yeah, should they come?
From the second you walk down the first street, the buzz is incredible. From everything, you don't have to be at the ticketed events, just people playing on the street. The buzz of music is in your ear from the second you get in any distance within Wexford. So it's brilliant and it's great for the town.
Brilliant. So definitely people should check it out. I'm going to give you a minute to get sorted, and I'm just going to say my last couple of lines here. So I will just thank everyone, all our guests this morning, including yourself, Owen, and whether you're at home or in the car or just in from milking, thank you very much for listening. Now, our sound engineer was James Feeney, our BCO was Miss Bruton, and today's programme was produced by Eileen Heron. Big FLA Ciall na Héireann ag Tosnú Amorc, Lough Garman, with a gig in the afternoon on the gig rig and the traditional ecumenical blessing of the instruments at St Iberius Church. Then the week builds to a crescendo next weekend. RT Radio 1 will, of course, be there with Kayleigh House, Louise Duffy, John Creedon, and you can check out all of the details on flacule.ie. You can hear my documentary also about children who were fostered on farms in the last century. It's called Farmed Out and is on Monday at 12:30 p.m. But until I speak to you again this time next week on Countrywide, this is The Black Frog and The Sanctuary, played by Owen Doyle.